definitely human.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
What forgotten things lurk in the darkened crevices of civilization beyond the ken of mere mortals? What forbidden knowledge awaits, eager to be uncovered and set loose upon the world? And what hope can four ordinary strangers enjoy when faced with forces far beyond their quotidian reckoning? Something unwholesome hides behind the kind and dutiful facade of Drakelow Hall, a convalescent center in rural Cumbria, 1919. Tonight, four unwitting idiots roleplay as characters in a sinister gauntlet of evil. I, Giorgio Mariani, games master and architect of fear, will put these characters through a landscape of broken bodies and shattered minds. A place where, sometimes, the only solace to be found lies in the infinite bad. The Secret of Drakelow Hall, Part 1. A motor car jerks and shudders in its transition from the smooth main roads to the winding country lanes of rural Derbyshire. It is autumn, 1919, and with the death and din of the Great War still ringing, four strangers find themselves cramped together in a moderately sized vehicle headed to Drakelow Hall, one of the last English manors still in use as a convalescence home for soldiers. An earnest-looking young woman wearing a plain beige woolen dress is fidgeting with a medical bag.
Hello, I'm Dorothy Taylor. I'm in Britain visiting family before I return to Connecticut. I was a nurse with the American military, stationed in France during the Great War and subsequent flu pandemic. I've only recently left. I'm going to Drakelow Hall to visit my colleague, Nurse Boskins, who served with me in the war.
A sour-faced, haughty lady in her late 50s, wearing a conservative green velvet dress, sits rigidly upright, peering expectantly at her fellow passengers.
My name is Cornelia Cavendish. I remember America well. I have travelled extensively, as you can probably tell, and I am now looking to dedicate part of my expansive fortune to sponsor a worthy hospital.
An immense mountain of a man stuffed into a suit at least one size too small adjusts the spectacles on his nose, his shirt buttons buckling worryingly over his bulk.
Sebastian St. Battenberg. Charmed, I'm sure. I'm just visiting a friend.
The passengers turn, looking down at the messy brown hair of a 15-year-old girl in a raggedy cotton dress and jacket. She has a strange, haunted look in her eyes.
My name is Joy Dutton. I'm looking for someone.
As the car bustles on, the rolling fields and narrow hedgerows start to get wilder and less well-kept. Weeds and brambles swell out into the road here and there, and soon our heroes are surrounded by trees, with fading sunlight dappled across the car's interior in a whirling skein. The car smells faintly of sweat now.
How much longer is this going to take?
Oh, I just shudder when she starts talking.
I said, how much longer is this going to take?
Okay.
So it seems like your comment falls on deaf ears, and you settle once more into a slightly less comfortable silence now, perhaps.
Okay. I see how it is.
I'm just going to look out the window.
Yeah. So after a few minutes, after about half an hour more, the car emerges from the woods into a vast, flat, beautifully kept green. It's sloping gently to one side, leading up to an imposing manor. This is Drakelow Hall. It's a wide, squat building, and the left half of its impressive brickwork has been overtaken by creeper vines. Above, on the third floor, you can see a figure looking out from the gallery window. It's a man, bare-chested, and his head and torso are bound with gauze. He looks down at you while your car pulls to a stop in the gravel at the front of the entrance. So waiting for you by the door is a small welcoming party, including who you presume to be your host, Sir Nigel Gresley, the owner of Drakelow Hall. So, the driver motions impassively for you to get out of his car.
I wait for the door to be opened.
I open the door.
Thank you. I exit.
What?
Okay, so you exit. You've opened the door. The rest of you just kind of get out. Do you want to say anything?
I follow behind.
Okay. And Dorothy? Yep. Okay. So, getting out of the car quite quickly pulls, makes a turn, pulls out, and leaves, disappears into the forest. So now you're there, standing in front of Drakelow Hall in the gravel, and before you there is Sir Nigel Gresley. You've heard a little bit about him, but not too much. You know that he's going to be your host. You, in particular, Cornelia, have had a brief, quite formal correspondence with him about the possibility of providing funding to the kind of the estate in recognition of the contribution that Manor is making to the previous war effort, but now to the maintenance and care of the veterans. But you don't really know him much beyond that, and you suspect that the letters might have been ghost-written anyways. So he's got with him a female companion, much younger than he, and a young man who he vigorously refers to as my boy. So Nigel Gresley himself is rail thin. He's in his 40s, and he has prominent teeth, which are unsuccessfully reined in by his thin, moist mustache and glossy goatee. He's wearing a dark green three-piece suit and a boater hat, and he's always got a cane with him. His female companion introduces herself mildly by holding out her hand as Angela Gresley. She's a strikingly beautiful woman in her late 20s. She has kind of a smooth, impassive face with smoky, lowered eyes and a measured pout. And she's wearing a grey heather coat over a dark red and brown patterned dress. The younger man, Tom Gresley, looks something like a shorter, squatter version of Nigel himself. So he's stockier, he has a fuller mustache and a fuller goatee, and he wears a brown suit, which is much more kind of worn out. He's got a weathered bowler hat and scuffed black shoes to accompany them. He's the kind of person who, when he shakes your hand, like really vigorously pumps it, almost like he's making a point, right? And he does this even with the three ladies. But especially kind of his eyes harden when he pumps your hand, Sebastian. He kind of, there's an unrecognized sense of competition between you.
I'd like to politely crush his hand.
Make an opposed strength check. So just roll your die and I'll add your strength bonus to it. Yes.
There's a nine.
Okay. Well, it's a close contest and, one, completely invisible to the people around you. but you see his shoulder just buckle a little bit.
The second it does, I want to like grin and clamp him on the shoulder. Good to meet you there. And Nigel, I've heard so much about you.
Okay, so Tom rubs his hand somewhat ruefully and says, yes, yes, very, very good to meet you. And Nigel says, yes, delightful to have guests at my manor. Won't you come in? I shall give you a tour of the grounds first. But in introductions first, I believe I know you, Cornelia.
Mrs. Cavendish.
Yes, Cavendish, of course.
You'll remember from our correspondence, of course.
Yes, a delightful exchange, yes.
Yes.
Well,
I enjoyed your second letter.
Yes.
The poem was wonderful.
One of my better efforts, I hope.
Yes.
Well, Very good. And you must be here to help us here at the manor. Dorothy, is it?
Dorothy Taylor, yes.
Yes. So one of my nurses, and he motions back at the... There's about four nurses in the retinue and a man who looks like a doctor as well. He motions for one of them to come forward without looking away from your face. One of them does indeed come forward. It's a friendly woman. She introduces herself as Susan Boskin. She's got kind of a doughy, heavy-set body, but she's got these bright, kind eyes. And she comes forward and gives you a hug and says, "Oh, it's so nice to see you, dear."
"Oh, Nurse Boskins, what a pleasure."
"Oh, you'll fit in well here, you will."
"Well, I'm not planning to stay for that long, but if I can help while I'm here, I'll be glad to."
"Oh, but I'm sure you'll get along just fine here."
"Yes, I'm sure."
Well, I should get back, Mr. Gresley. I should be getting back." "Yes, of course. Get back." And you, young lady, I'm not sure your name comes to mind."
"Joy. My name is Joy Dutton."
"Very good. And you are here, Joy Dutton, to see perhaps a relative?"
"Aunt Agatha. Agatha Dutton."
"Do we have an... Nurse Ackland!" A larger nurse in her late 50s. She's got a really thin, wiry, powerful frame and clear grey eyes, steps forward. She has kind of this authoritative presence that all the young nurses part to let her go through. She says, "A nurse, Agatha? Oh, we don't have... Well, I shall have to check my records, dear, but I can't recall anyone of that name." "Okay. No mind. You're our guest now, and we'll take good care of you until we find your Agatha."
"Thank you."
"A tour, then?"
"A tour? Well, of course." okay, so Nigel starts taking you towards the entrance. At this point, the rest of the retinue peels off back into the building. But Nigel starts taking you around, first taking you on an inspection of the front of the grounds. "A quick tour of the lawn, perhaps, my good fellows," he says unctuously. There's a light haze of rain that begins falling as Nigel takes you wending through the green immediately in front of the manor. He starts pointing out relatively uncommon species of trees in the distance, so you can't really verify his assertions, but you take him at his word. And he starts noting areas where a depression in the land that you can no longer see was filled in by workers years ago.
I try to sort of make sounds of agreement that are louder than him speaking. "Now go on, please. Fascinating."
Nigel's quite game with your conversation, and he takes you up on it, and he starts kind of a war of escalation as his
"Oh, you don't say! Wonderful!"
and the rest of you are left kind of trailing behind, hearing this increasingly escalating exchange. So as you turn behind the manor, you come to a slightly busier area of the grounds. Here, there's two women in nurse uniforms who are scratching at the earth with trowels in a small but busy-looking garden. Behind that, there is a pen which is full of foxhounds who are looking around curiously at the new guests. And beyond that, you see some stables and then the edge of the woods themselves, maybe a 5 to 10 minute walk beyond the stables. So Nigel has just finished telling you about some of the fine field hunter horses that he has tied up in the stables. And then he kind of pauses, looks at his watch, and then turns to the manor with a slightly distracted look. He says, "Well, I suppose I'd better see where supper's gotten to, if you'll excuse me. Feel free to take in the grounds and look around."
"Certainly I will." I shake my head.
Okay, so now you're left behind the main building of the manor, and so you've got the garden, and you've got the foxhound pen, and then beyond that you've got the woods. So there's some up to you where you want to go, if you want to have a look at anything further, or if you just want to loiter around until dinner.
"I believe I shall look at the hounds."
"Okay.
Yes, yeah, I will join you."
Okay, so you start making your way towards the hounds. As you do so, you notice that there's some sort of ferment happening with the hounds now. Before, they were looking at you curiously and kind of straining their snouts through the grating of their enclosure, wagging their tails. But now, the 20 or so foxhounds that Sir Gresley keeps Are kind of have developed into this churning mass, and they look like they're whirling around some unspecified point in the ground at the center of the enclosure. So the soil beneath them now has been kicked and poured into this grainy mud with the haze of rain that's been falling from above. And as you stand there looking at them, almost entranced by this kind of vortex, bits of dirt and mud are flicked over your shoes.
This is making me deeply uncomfortable for some reason. I don't know why. What's wrong with the dogs?
It's very odd behavior.
I just peer in, staring at the
I jump mats. After Dorothy says, I'm like, ah! Charmed! Pleasure, I don't think we've met.
Animals are very wise, you know.
No, they're not.
They are.
No.
They see things that we don't.
Like what kind of things?
Well, let's have a look. I look at what's in this depression.
Okay, make a perception check.
Five.
Okay.
Well, they see things that we don't.
Okay. You step forward and try to focus the gaze of your third eye on whatever this the vortex of dogs is. But honestly, you've never really been this close to a kennel full of foxhounds, and the smell takes you aback. And so it, rather than peering in and focusing whatever it was there, you take a step back and kind of hold your wrist to your hand, to your nose, and aren't able to perceive anything particular.
Well, now I'm intrigued.
Very interesting, I'd say.
To sort of show that I'm not a dullard, I'd like to step forward and also make a... What do I have to do? Like a perception
check? A perception check, yeah. So I'll tell you how that goes.
This one?
Yeah.
Four!
That dog's all right! Yes. I've seen many, many dogs in my time, and these are definitely dogs, or large cats of some kind. Probably dogs.
Yep. Yeah. As they're whirling round, you find yourself lost again in the hypnotic pattern that they're forming, and you're almost unwittingly counting them one by one. But it's fruitless because they are also similar, and they create this whirling mass.
Do none of the other inhabitants of this courtyard notice this at all?
Yeah, so there's two nurses who are kind of scratching at the floor on their hands and knees in the garden, but they don't seem to care at all. The dogs aren't even making that much sound. They're just kind of snuffling and pawing and kind of going like murmuring, but they're not like barking or anything like that.
Weird.
So at the sound of your voice now, the hounds stop their whirling. They're completely still and silent, and then their tails completely still and flat, and they all press up against the grate, looking you first thing they're looking at you, but then you realize they're looking past you, behind you, to where the woods are, to where the edge of the woods are.
Quickly snap my neck around to see what the dogs are looking at, slightly hurting my neck.
I look around slower.
So they're looking in the woods.
Yeah, they seem to be staring straight at the edge of the woods. So all four of you see this now, so you can all make a perception check.
Is that
19?
15. 17. Okay, so actually all of you notice that right at the edge of the woods there's a silhouette of something. You two, Sebastian and Cornelia, realize that it's a stag. And it's a stag that seems to be standing stock still at the edge of the woods, looking at you or the hounds behind you. You're not sure.
Oh, that's a relief. It's just a stag. Nothing to worry about. Nothing strange going on here. It's just
the
a stag.
Animals are communing.
No.
Yes.
No.
Very interesting.
I take my glasses off and just like put my hands over my eyes like I've got a headache. Start pouring at my pocket where my cigarettes are.
Okay, so the stag takes a step back into the woods and then turns and disappears. The hounds now seemingly released from whatever compulsion made them look towards the edge of the woods, resume normal dog behavior, just kind of milling around and snapping at each other and snuffling at each other's behinds and things like that.
We have borne witness to something, I believe.
I guess I look to Dorothy and just kind of like do a face like, what is...
Do you not think so?
No, I don't think so. It was just a stag. Come on, let's check out something else in the grounds.
No!
We can't see you, it's raining. Meant to see.
I go back to the building.
Okay.
Yeah, let's go inside. Ready.
Okay. Brilliant.
I linger to have a cigarette and then follow her afterwards.
Okay, so as you're walking past, you notice the two nurses in the garden. One of them is Nurse Boskin, your acquaintance. And she sees you four stepping past, and she gets up and kind of wipes off her smock and says, "Oh, how are you liking the grounds then?"
Oh, they're beautiful.
Oh, very nice. What were you having a look at? The dogs?
Yeah, they were having some, there was some odd behaviour there for a second.
Oh, the dogs are lovely, aren't they? So playful.
Yes, they're good dogs.
And what will you all be having for supper? We'll be having soup, but what would you like for tomorrow, maybe?
What are our options?
Well, anything
list of them.
So we make do with what we've got in the garden here. You can see in the garden before you, it's a relatively standard patch. You can see marrows, onions, cauliflowers, peas, parsnips, among other things.
I'll have pie.
Parsnip pie, perhaps.
Perhaps not.
Make perception checks, guys, as you're inspecting the garden.
13.
3? That's a garden, all right.
11. 9.
9. Okay. Cornelia, you notice as you're peering at all the options in the garden that there is a small but extremely vigorous patch of lemon trees. Their bulbous, bright yellow fruits are almost peeking out obscenely from behind a trellis of sodden grey-green vines. They look extremely out of place here.
Why are you thinking those thoughts?
I can't help it. You're really harsh on the lemons.
Interesting.
Mm. And I'm going to let you make a medicine check here, actually.
Cool. The d20?
Mm-hmm.
3.
Mm. Okay.
I would like to make an occult check.
Mm. Okay.
On the trees.
Mm-hmm.
Of their spooky spiritual trees.
And the lemon trees.
1.
A 1. Okay, so I'm going to make you make a wisdom save now.
Come on. 16?
16. Okay, so I'm going to say you take, you gain 5 dread now. As you start looking at the trees, a kind of faraway look glazes over your eyes. Mm-hmm. And you get this sense of horror from looking at these fruits with their kind of skin-like peel.
I like nudge Dorothy. Like, do you want
to... You other three see that her lower lip is kind of quivering.
Are you quite looking... all right, ma'am? Ma'am?
Excuse me? Right. Yes, there's something about those trees.
Oh, God. This woman is bad.
What is it about those trees?
I don't know. You look at them. What do you see?
I look at the trees.
Okay. They just look like completely ordinary but very healthy lemon trees. So at this point...
it's an apple tree! What's the problem? Let's move on! For God's sake.
At this point, all four of you notice that both Nurse Boskin and the other nurse there, Nurse Callan, have kind of stopped really engaging with you four, and they're looking a little bit glazed and far away, not unlike you, Cornelia, but they seem to have also dropped their trowels, and they're standing stock still in the rain now, staring past you back into the woods.
All right, I'm starting to feel a little weird about all of this.
Oh, are you? Oh, now you are. Now you are. The lemon tree wasn't enough, I suppose.
You're right.
Yes.
How could I have missed that? What time is it?
It's about 5:30 in the afternoon.
So, nearing dinner time?
Mm. Yeah, nearing dinner time. The light is almost completely failed.
But there's nothing at the trees that they're looking at.
This time there's nothing at the trees, but you do feel this kind of... There is something that catches your eye as well in looking at them, although you can't quite place why.
Right, we're done here. I'm going in now.
Yes, I walk to the dining room loudly just saying, supper! Supper! Supper!
Okay.
Wince every time.
So you start taking the path that curls back round to the front of the manor to approach the main entrance. As you do, and start going up the fairly grand steps towards the main door, you see a distracted-looking man in a doctor's coat start stepping down the steps, manor entrance, and he seems to be headed past you, basically where you had come from, back to the back of the manor. He notices you as he's coming down, and he stops. He looks a bit flustered, and he says, "Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I saw you as you came in, of course, but I didn't get the chance to say hello to you. My name is Dr. Blythe."
"Sebastian St. Battenberg," and I give him a handshake.
Okay.
I'd like to make a strength check.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, 9.
No, yeah, his hand is moist and limp, and he seems entirely unprepared for the experience.
I laugh and clap him on the shoulder. Good to meet you.
Well met, sir. Cornelia Cavendish.
Very pleasant to meet you. Dorothy Taylor.
And I'm Joy Dutton.
Okay, so he takes in, he says, yeah, very good. Yes, yes,
I
yes.
Jump in the air when Joy speaks. Like, what? Why is there a child here? How long have you been here?
Not a child, I'm 15.
Oh, apologies.
And why are you here? Can I ask reasons?
No, we're not together. Oh, we just happen to be in the same space at the same time. No, I'm here to see an old friend.
I see. Oh, what's his
George.
Old? George. I'm afraid, kind of, he pinches the bridge of his nose.
What?
I'm afraid George is no longer among us.
Oh, he's left already? Oh, fantastic. Well, I'll be on my way then. And glad to know that he made a full recovery.
I don't know. always a difficult conversation.
Yes, yes. He has, well, goodbye, I guess. I'll be leaving now to see... did he say which way he was headed? Back into town to see his...
I believe... No, sir.
Yes.
He has, as it were, shuffled off the mortal coil. You know... Oh. We've all lost many friends in the war.
I think you could have had a bit more tact when you said that. Jesus, man, shuffled off the mortal coil. He was my friend.
My deepest condolences.
I know you doctor types are hardened sorts, but Jesus, I'd like to sit down.
and you, child?
I'm looking for my aunt, Aunt Agatha.
Agatha. Yes, I remember Agatha. A lively one. No longer.
I'm just like, what do you mean? Oh, for God's sake.
Head Nurse Ackland will explain with Agatha. An unfortunate circumstance, but we'll take good care of you tonight.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, supper's almost ready.
Do you have any good news, Doctor?
Yes, what's for supper at least?
I believe some sort of fish consommé. But in any case, it is well spiced and warm. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. I need to attend to something over behind the manor, if you'll excuse me. And he starts to walk off, unless you want to detain him with any more questions.
So we're just going to stay the night, are we? I sort of call to him as he leaves.
He stops and turns and is still looking distracted and says, well, yes, I suppose. Yes, if you have any business here that might continue into the morning, then we have rooms made up. You'll find we don't have many patients here, actually. Most of them have healed up and gone home. The ones that we have are require more long-term care. So we do have a few bedrooms that are...
My business as of now will be predominantly drinking. Is that acceptable?
Oh, entirely, entirely. And I apologise for breaking the news in such an indelicate way.
That's all right.
And with that, our four heroes enter the manor, turning their backs to the gathering storm. Drakelow Hall's squat brickwork is stained with the first vanguard drops of rain, and clammy wind shakes the leaves. Something stirs in the darkening air. Little do they know the horrors that await them within. You've been listening to The Secret of Drakelow Hall. Written by Giorgio Mariani and produced and edited by David Knight and Tom Dalling, with music by Jonathan Day. Starring Eleanor Kohler as Dorothy Taylor, Maximilian John as Cornelia Cavendish, David Knight as Sebastian St. Battenberg, and Charlie May as Joy Dutton. I am Giorgio Mariani, Games Master. You can follow The Infinite Bad, as well as our other podcast shows, on Twitter at HumanDefinitely, and support the production of this series on Patreon. That's patreon.com/definitelyhuman. The Infinite Bad is a Definitely Human production.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.